2010 saw many changes and improvements to the Diamond Synchrotron, as well as good news about how it will continue to improve in the future. Diamond's Physical Sciences Director, Trevor Raymond, explains more about the synchrotron's journey to completion as Diamond gears up for Phase 3.
This is important for Diamond because it's always been seen as a three-phase development project. In Phases 1 and 2, we built the machine and are close to completing 22 beamlines. And in Phase 3, we'll add a further 10 of these beamlines. So Phase 3 is going to improve our capacity for doing science and engineering and technology by about 50%.
Now, how are these phases actually broken up, though? So what makes Phase 1 and 2 and 3 separate?
Well, the way that a synchrotron operates is that it provides a number of quite independent scientific facilities that we call beamlines, which just simply describes the fact that the light is a beam and it comes down a line of equipment. But perhaps a better way of thinking about these is as independent scientific laboratories. Every laboratory is designed for a specific task, and if you want to have a broad scope, then you need to have a large number of beamlines because each one is a very specialized, designed for a particular scientific purpose. By adding a further 10 of these beamlines, we're improving the scope of what we can do enormously. I'd like to give you a couple of examples. There are a series of methods that have been developed outside of synchrotrons in other areas of science called high throughput, where you deliberately employ automation, robotics, artificial intelligence to squeeze the very most out of your instruments. And this does two things. First of all, it enables more people to access the facility. But not only that, it enables you to do things you couldn't dream of doing before simply because it would take too long. You can ask questions that are more difficult simply because you can do more experiments more quickly. Phase 3 gives us increased volume and it gives us hugely increased scope of what we can do.
You mentioned the light generated by the core synchrotron itself is what changes and is altered for each beamline. But in 2010, a change was actually made to the core synchrotron and the way it produces its light.
Yes, it was. Now, if you imagine a synchrotron looking down from above, the way we normally explain it is as a many-sided coin, a 24-sided polygon. That gives you the impression of the electrons traveling in a straight line between magnets that steer the beam. So the electrons will go in a straight line and then be steered around a corner. They'll do that 24 times altogether to go round. And then on the long sections of this polygon, we put what we call insertion devices, which are purpose-built magnetic structures that produce the light that we want. But electrons are not really like that. All electrons are negatively charged. And if you just put them together and leave them alone, they'll repel each other. And so what that means is as the electrons are traveling along in a straight line, they're also moving apart from each other, which means the beam gets bigger. So part of the structure of the machine are components to refocus the beam back down to a very small point. And so what you have to imagine is that not only do you have the electrons moving in a straight line, but they're diverging, and then you refocus them. Now, in the original structure of Diamond, they were arranged so that the electron beam was focused at the center of each of these straight sections, because that's where we would put the insertion devices. Some of these straight sections are actually quite long. They're 5 meters long, and there is, in fact, space to put two of these insertion devices. So in principle, you could have two sources of light rather than one, and that would mean that you could build two beamlines rather than one beamline. However, the fact that the electrons are focused at the center means that if you have two insertion devices, they've both got to be off-center, and neither is in the optimum position. So what they've done this year is they've changed the structure of the machine such that they can insert additional focusing lenses at the end of each of the straight sections, and also in the middle of the straight section. And so that now the electrons, as they enter this straight section, are focused very early on. They diverge, and then they're focused back in again on the straight section and then out. So it becomes, instead of having one dip in the middle, it's got a double dip.
So essentially, this is just leading to more regular, I guess, focusing of electrons along their route around the synchrotron.
More specialized. I won't say it's regular, but it's more specialized. the take-home message is the light that is delivered out to the users is going to be brighter and more flexible.
And, well, you mentioned that Diamond's priority is always the users that come in and actually use the facility for their research. And you actually reached a milestone in 2010 in terms of, well, the research and the publications resulting from this research.
Yes, we did indeed. We reached the milestone of 1,000 publications produced from users and from people who work at Diamond. And that's 1,000 publications since the start of Diamond. We started operating in 2007.
Are there any particular papers that are particularly noteworthy or stand out in your memory?
There have been some very interesting studies carried out at the University of Leicester where they've been looking at the fate of depleted uranium, an environmental study. And there have been work on lead-free ceramics to make piezoelectrics. That's an important material science application. And there have been work carried out at Imperial College, where they've been able to solve a 20-year-old mystery about the way that HIV attacks the body.
Well, Trevor, everything you've mentioned just reiterates the fact that such a wide variety of scientific disciplines are researched at Diamond. But another important aspect of the facility is the fact that you develop workshops and you have a great deal of outreach.
Yes, that's true. Diamond exists for people who don't use it as much as it does for those who do. We're now a mature facility and we are keen to attract a very large number of new users and experienced users. And one way we do that is we host meetings. These meetings range from training, meetings that simply liaise with users. We bring them in, listen to them, listen to their concerns. And we host external scientific societies, for example. And of course, we welcome lots of visitors from the local area on our Inside Diamond Days.
And we'll be hearing more about these outreach activities with Sarah Boundy later in the programme. That was Diamond's Physical Sciences Director, Trevor Raymond.